Welcome to Profiling Criminal Minds. I'm Dan.
And I'm Dr. Redmond.
And this is it, the last episode of Season 6 of Criminal Minds. The, what I think a lot of people will agree is the last season before it got really bad. Like, we've been doing some complaining this season. But it's not a terrible show this season. I don't know that we're going to be able to say that starting in season 7. Like, I don't remember season 7 very well, because it's the weird transitional season. But then, and you know, we get a little more Ian Doyle, which is always welcome. But, you know, it's not until season 8 and the addition of Jeannie Triplehorn that you're like, oh, this show is terrible. So I feel like season 7 is a transition to terrible, and season 6 is the last season where you're like, okay, this is still recognizably a TV show. I was going to say that might have come across harsher than I meant it, but I meant it pretty harsh.
Yeah, I don't think, you know. Yeah.
I don't think that's necessarily the case. But anyway, let's get started, and then we're going to be talking about Emily quite a bit. Dr. Redmond was nice enough to send me a little note, an interview excerpt that she found of Paget Brewster on leaving the show, and whoo, doggy. That
yes,
was but we'll get to that at the end of the episode.
Okay.
All right. Starting off with
Out of the Light. When a North Carolina woman's injuries are consistent with those found on an unidentified corpse discovered 3 years earlier, the BAU juggles again. Profiling a sexual sadist and determining whether or not there are other victims.
Again, yeah, I don't know who wrote I think it's the same person.
It has to be.
One person is writing every single one of these review, these synopses. And that one person just doesn't know what the word juggle means.
Yeah.
Like that's all that can be happening here.
Yeah. Just yeah. Doesn't understand just what the word juggles.
Doesn't understand what the word juggles means. And that's, you know what? Like we keep saying we have to accept it and then we keep laughing at them every time. Cause it's always so silly. Yeah, it's so frustrating. But yeah, it's hard not to though. So yeah, this is an entertaining episode-ish. It's got a weird ass killer with a crazy motive. But it goes right there into, child abuse the way, you know, they always do. There's the really strange thing though, is that they walk out, The woman ran through the woods and fell off a cliff and, she dies. And it's tragic. So Derek gets out there to the woods and they're like, the dogs, you know, were leading in that direction. Right? And Derek's like, well, then we'd better check in the other direction because definitely the killer took an article of the, woman's clothing and created a false scent trail because he knew dogs would be onto him. I'm like, and the thing is, it's one of those things that just comes out of nowhere, and you're like, oh, Derek, I mean, it turns out you're right, but wow. That's just ridiculous. It's especially funny, right? Because we then see the guy, that he covered up the actual scent trail by walking along with a spray bottle full of ammonia. And here's the thing. If he just sprayed the whole area with ammonia, you would smell that right away. Like, so immediately. No, but it's weird, right?
Of course it's weird.
It's strange. No, it's seriously strange, this scene. And then what the killer does, I literally have no idea why the killer does what he does. Cause the killer, so there's a pervert, photography instructor.
Sorry, yeah.
Instructor working at the, local high school or community college.
Whatever.
Yeah. No, cause the girls took, additional courses there as part of summer camp. But the point is, he's a pervert guy. And so what's crazy is, and we can talk more about the main episode. I just need to talk about the twist ending at the end of this. So what the guy does is, he's like, I'm going to frame the pervert for all my murders. So he puts a bunch of body parts in the guy's front yard. Right? But then at the end of the episode, the twist result is that the pervert the whole time knew he was the killer. That's how the episode ends. Which we can talk about how that could never really happen, like the way the episode ends. But the point is, the last shot of the episode is the pervert developing the photographs that the killer takes of the women he kills. So the whole time the pervert knew it slash was in on it. And I don't understand why the killer thinks he can frame the pervert without having the pervert immediately say, that guy did it.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't he say that guy? Why doesn't he in the episode say, that guy did it? In all logic, isn't that what should happen immediately?
And you're expecting logic from Criminal Minds.
It's so baffling, this episode.
Well, all I could think of was.
Yeah.
Time for the pre-filer.
I know. Well, and the reason the end of the episode couldn't have happened, right, is that the way they were going after this pervert, right, there's no way that they didn't develop all of his outstanding film. Like, there's just no way. And so they would have found the evidence that he was involved. You know? So I really feel like definitely 100% they would have caught him. But I feel like he would have confessed the minute he was associated, the minute he's been framed, right? And he has been framed. Why wouldn't he say, I didn't do it. It was definitely this other guy who did it. Like, why isn't that the absolute thing that happens next? And I mean, and you say, well, it's because it's not a good show, but I want a better answer than that.
What I would say is he probably doesn't tell him because he doesn't think that they'll find the guy. And then he can continue on with his relationship with this guy.
Except the thing is, there's body parts in your yard. You know? There's body parts in your yard. You're gonna get arrested and thrown in jail forever for the body parts in your yard. Like, there's no way around it. I don't understand how this guy thinks he's gonna get away with anything when his yard is full of body parts.
I don't know why I missed the body parts in the yard.
Because they immediately say, oh, well, this guy has been careful about anything. And the reason they dismiss the, it's an easy thing to forget because they dismiss it with like one line. They have the same character, right? They immediately after they find out about the body parts in the yard, they then have the character say, well, that means it's definitely not the pervert who did it, because this killer is so incredibly careful all the time.
Oh, yes, yes, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that he wouldn't just leave body parts in his yard. Okay, the killer must be framing him. But for some reason, these characters don't immediately think, well, if he knows that this guy's a pervert enough to frame him, maybe this guy knows him.
Well, what I don't understand, it's true. Okay. I mean, I have to, go with, I think you've got a point at some point, but like why they didn't, because they're talking to him. They know he's going to do it again.
Yep.
So,
why not?
He's eventually going to get, cause they know Derek's makes a big deal about his pictures and how he's going to, and how he did this, that, and it isn't enough just to look at them and blah, 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 blah.
Like he does this whole extended thing about how this guy's definitely gonna do it.
Yeah. So
and, I mean, I believe them.
And you have access right now.
But to all
they
of
had
these kids.
Access yeah. to all of his pictures, to all of everything.
Yeah. Like you can talk to the kids about how creepy it is. You can look at his pictures. You got access to it. And the thing is, you know he's a creep, but the fact that there are corpse, and this is what bothered me so much about the episode, the fact that there are corpse parts in the yard means that the killer also knows he's a creep.
Yeah.
Or else why would he have he wouldn't try to frame some random person. He would try to frame someone who he thinks he can successfully frame.
Right, yeah. And he almost got away with it.
He did. Right? If anyone but the team had been working on it, he would have gotten away with framing that guy, because that guy is a creep.
Yeah.
Right? And so you want to sit there and say, but why aren't you taking this to the next step?
Well, interrogating
him about it.
Yeah. I mean, this guy is, clearly he's almost a partner. Well, he is.
He is. He's going into the guy's torture dungeon and taking either he's going into the torture dungeon and taking pictures, or he's just developing the pictures that the torture dungeon guy takes.
Yeah.
Right? But either way, he's involved in the crime.
Yeah. He knows.
Yeah.
Either way, he knows.
Either way, he knows. And the crazy part is, when you watch the episode, I mean, they find the killer by going through the list of people who use his darkroom. Because again, they figure, oh well, that's how he must have known you were a creep, blah, 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 blah. They should have pushed him on it. Instead of just going through the list of people there's a guy, and he has a tragedy, and he was molesting his daughter, and then the mother killed herself and the daughter to protect her from being molested by the guy. Which, Jesus. That got bleak fast, huh?
Just like that. Yeah, okay.
Like that, it turned into the bleakest episode of the season. And he's trying to recreate this relationship with the daughter he was molesting. Cause, that's the sound effect you want to make when you try and describe the plot of this episode. When you say it out loud, it really does come across as awful, doesn't it?
Yeah. It's just an awful, awful episode.
Yeah. But they just go through the list and it's like, yeah, but he has to be more connected than that.
Yeah, well.
Absolutely has to be more connected than that. And they let it go and they stop investigating the creep in a way that I just don't believe from the characters. You know?
As I said, where's the profiler when you need him?
I know, right? Who, anyone could look at this guy. And say, yeah, he's a time bomb. Let's deal with him now. But, no. Sadly, they don't pre-file.
Even then, they would have only gotten him because he didn't molest, apparently, any of these girls. He just took these pictures.
But the very fact that he had photographs possession.
They could have gotten some kind of an accessory.
Exactly. Yes. He was an accessory to this serial killing. He wouldn't have gone down for everything, but he would have been listed as a sex offender. He would have been on the record. Like, they could have gotten this guy.
Yeah.
And it just kind of annoys me that they didn't. But yeah, so it's an episode that's unhappy to start with and then gets incredibly bleak when you find out the backstory.
Yeah.
And then they screw up their attempt to catch the guy. They just do everything wrong in this episode because they massively screw up the attempt to capture the guy by, like, rolling up to his place of work in just a bunch of government cars. Like, you know, he doesn't know he's been caught, right? This is the time to use subtlety. Remember how you dealt, like, when a guy doesn't know that he's been caught, that's when you sneak in. Remember how you did it earlier? I guess it was last year with the guy who was murdering people at swinging parties. That's what you, oh no, that was this year. But that's what you do. You sneak up on him. Sneak up.
I'm sorry. I'm just going, as I said, yeah.
Oh, and then they don't block in his car. They find his car at a roadblock and then they don't block it in. Like that's, like you can just drive your car up next to his car and then he can't escape. You know?
Yes, I know, but whoever then did this.
Yeah, put it together, you know, they,
absolutely love the idea of Derek saving her from drowning
I
and
know.
Bringing her back to life. So what are you going to do?
It's frustrating.
The show is terribly, terribly frustrating. It was a creepy episode.
It's a creep. I mean, the thing is, like, from a technical standpoint, it's a very creepy episode.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's funny. It's in some ways, it's actually not a bad episode, but
there's some plot stuff that's really troubling. Yeah, especially because, like, so many of the kids did the photography course, and you're like, does that mean that he's, like, pointing them out to the killer?
Well, yeah, I mean, that would be, that's...
It's kind of an implication that doesn't, because they find the guy, because all of them took this course of his, right? Yeah. So it kind of seems like there's got to be a deeper connection than just he's using your photography.
Because they're all girls who seem to have taken his courses.
Yeah. Which raises the suggestion that maybe he's actually pointing out the girls to kidnap.
Yeah.
Yeah, like there's this, all of this extra creepy stuff in this episode that they don't really get into as much as they should have. And it's very frustrating.
Well, yeah, it is frustrating because it does make the episode unsatisfying.
It feels unsatisfying. Yes. Okay, yeah, that's the word I'm looking
for. More than anything else, it's just an unsatisfying episode because they left way too many things.
So many dangling threads, yeah.
Yeah, and...
That's what it is.
Yeah, and so therefore we all sit here and go, yeah, but what are you letting this guy go? Because they wanted a...
The killer is still out there ending. I'm like, no, guys, come on.
Come on.
You can do better. Yeah. You can do better than this.
No, you can't.
No, wait, it's Criminal Minds.
They can't do better than this, but.
Jesus. All right, let's move on to the next episode. Let's move on to the next episode before we, get any further into complaining about these guys.
Yeah, and it's not. Big C. When a Jacksonville, Florida pumping crew discovers 12 sets of skeletal remains buried in a mass grave, the BAU sets out to establish a connection between the victims and the killer. Yeah. Meanwhile, Morgan becomes personally involved in the case after his aunt arrives in Florida with suspicions that her missing daughter is among the dead.
Oof.
Again, I'm going, do they not watch the episodes before they write the synopses?
I mean, and
this is Jim Clemente and Breen Fraser wrote this.
Oh, okay.
And Kershaw directed it.
Nice. Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's interesting because again, creepy opening, although it's one of those things where it's like, you've got a boat, right? You've got a boat. You can dump the corpses anywhere in the entire Gulf of Mexico, right? Just anywhere. But he's like dumping the bodies close enough to shore that they're getting caught in a, an intake valve. Like, you know, some of this is on you. Like, some of this is you're getting caught because you don't care enough about your job, killer. Like, I just want to blame him for this one. But yeah, it's terrible thing for me to say. It's true though. It's funny just because it could be, it's an interesting episode in that respect. And they've got a very creepy, they got an extremely creepy killing method this week. Oh my God. Like that was just rough to watch. The guy who uses anti-seizure medication to make people incredibly susceptible.
Yeah.
That's just terrible. Like, that's really horrible this week.
Well, it goes on the really horrible last week's episode.
Well, yeah, I know.
No, but it is really horrible. I mean,
even by this show's standards, it's incredibly rough to watch.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, like, even by this show's already pretty bleak standards, this is an extremely rough show to watch, and... Yeah, it's the kind of haunting imagery, the whole using this to murder a guy, that it just really sticks with you this week.
Yeah.
I was very upset by the guy trying to force him to murder his son.
Yeah. What I wanted was the father to survive.
I know, right?
Mm-hmm.
I know.
It wouldn't have hurt. It'll let daddy be in the hospital.
But no. No.
We need our kills.
It out. They want to bleak it out because that's what they do.
Yeah.
Just makes me very upset that they couldn't have, you know, come on, guys, throw us a bone, you know?
Jeez, it would have been nice. You know, I was assuming we were going to have the guy then sexually molest the kid as well, you know?
But apparently they're like, no, he just decided to adopt him to replace, right?
Himself.
To recreate his problems with his own father. I'm like, oh, okay. That's, as you say, that's less bleak than I was expecting from this show.
Well, you know, I mean, that's my line, eh? When we were watching The Inside and I'm going, yes, but this is how Criminal Minds would have done it.
Yeah.
You know, I have this now. Yeah. Okay. Here's how Criminal Minds does these things.
And that's the thing. It's like, you can always say, well, this is, Criminal Minds has such a well-known, like, structure for this stuff that it's hard not to make that kind of prediction. That said, as you say, they did not go that way this time. So, well, thank heavens for small favors.
Yeah, because they've done it so many times when it's not even necessary.
Yeah, they've just thrown in this bonus awfulness.
Yeah.
You know, and, just to help us all wallow in misery.
Yeah.
So it's nice. You're right. It's nice that they didn't do that this time. One thing that I found very peculiar and quite contrived was their weird rationale that, like, because someone was taking a train down, like, he must be, cause they know he's only gonna, they figure he's targeted a guy and his son, right? Because the dead body of the dad has turned up.
Yeah.
And so they're like, well, the only thing that would make him overpower the thing was love for his son. I'm like, I get that rationale. Thumbs up. Makes perfect sense to me. Then they're like, all right, so we need to find a father and son traveling alone. How do you know there's not a wife's body that didn't wash up? How do you know he didn't try to kill you rather than kill his wife? Like, they immediately jump to it must be a father and son traveling alone. It could have been a whole family, and the wife is either still kidnapped or already dead, or it could have been a guy willing to go that far to try and save his wife, right?
Yes,
like, the fact that they jump to, it must be a single father, and he only could have overcome it to protect his son, I'm like, you don't earn those leaps at all.
No, you like, don't.
100%, you didn't earn those leaps of logic.
No.
And then the fact that, oh, well, if they were taking and the craziest leap of all, if they were taking a train, then it must be a father and son, leaving wherever and coming to Florida because of, they were escaping like an abusive situation. I'm like, or they just like the train, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're like, well, he was, we found a case where there was, indications that the mother had abused the son and so he was taking him out of state, blah, blah, blah. Or what if his wife died and they like the train? You know?
No, and the other thing, but I didn't understand the killer either. How could he say that this man had abandoned his son? Like, his whole point is people who are abandoning their responsibilities.
I know, that's the
So I don't understand how this fits his profile.
He doesn't at all.
No.
And I mean, I guess what they would say is he has given up his, when he sees a father and son, maybe I'm gonna fix this for them. Maybe the son looks exactly like he did as a kid, or maybe the father looks exactly the way he did, his father did when he was that age. And so he is giving up his MO because this pair reminds him so intensely of himself and his dad that he's throwing away his MO. But you're right to point out that this is completely at odds with his entire MO and the rest of the profile.
Yeah, and come on. I mean, these guys don't just all of a sudden change.
Yeah. Also, if he was going to run a charter boat, his boat should be less disgusting.
Like, yeah, you know. Who's gonna hire that boat?
The weird part is it's like that the boat was supposed to look like that when they thought the character was a fisherman, right?
Yeah.
And then they're like, oh.
Oh, whoops. But,
you know, how is he getting people out onto the boat? Oh, maybe he runs a charter service. Good call. And then they're like, do we change the boat prop though? No, we do not have time to get another boat. Cause it's crazy that they're like, who would get like, even if these guys, we're asked to believe that it's like this guy fleeing from the abusive wife, trying to get set up in a new town the same day they arrive. Oh, let's go out on a boat charter. No, first off, no.
The guy finds them he finds them on the trains, remember?
I know he finds them on the train, but he still got to lure them out to the boat. He didn't pull a gun on them on the train and then get them all the way to the docks across town just holding a gun on them.
No, that's
the point is they were lured out to the boat, and who, seeing that boat, doesn't say, you know what, I'm not getting on this boat.
No, I don't.
This is a murder boat.
This is not a good idea.
This is clearly, I am clearly looking at a murder boat. I'm not getting on this boat. 100%. No.
Well, and it is a father-son group.
Exactly.
It wasn't like everybody else seems to have been single.
Everyone else was single. And I guess, you know, they just like happened to, oh, I'll just go out on the water for one day. And I guess, I think what happens is, so he takes people out on the water, right? Yeah. And just by chatting with them, he decides who is running away from their responsibilities. And then later the thing is, I have a hard time figuring out how he's getting these people going. Cause like no one goes out on a boat charter alone. You know, like who would ever go out on a charter boat alone?
Yeah, there's a lot of things that didn't make sense.
Right?
With this episode.
So it's not just me who thinks
like it didn't fit, you know? I mean, there are these things that just don't fit with
the rest of the premise.
Like, yeah, okay, we want a father and son here, because they've got this cool ending. They have this cool ending, but they can't figure out how to get there. Or somebody doesn't, well, it's just a question of nobody sits in the writing room and says, but does that make sense?
Yeah.
And I think that's the biggest problem.
Is they're not putting in that extra work.
That little bit of work that says, does this make sense from beginning to end?
Yeah. And it really doesn't.
And the problem is that I this is one thing, right? As you know, I read scripts and stuff like that periodically. Yeah. And I have watched rough cuts and stuff like that. And I will tell you that for me, if I had a script in front of me, it's much easier for me to pick out the flaws and the problems.
Yeah.
Right? Than it is when I'm watching.
Right.
There's little things when you're watching, right?
That you'll notice.
But if you want to, like, little piddly things. But of if course. You want the whole thing, you know, you
For
get...
For you, it's much easier to engage with it that way when it's written down.
Written down, because when I get to a point, I don't feel like, I mean, this is my first Passover when I'm watching, right?
Yeah.
So it's a first Passover, because then I'll write down the questions and then... You know, I'll go back to look. Whereas when I'm reading, something gets to me, right? Like it hits me and I just whip back the pages, right? Yeah. And go, oh yeah, no, this doesn't work. This doesn't work.
Whereas you're not going to rewind a TV show.
You know,
okay,
so
I get it.
You can pass things over. Now it's because we're going through this the second time and because we're watching everything.
That you start noticing this stuff more.
The minute you just say, okay, let's see if I had this script, I'm going, okay, we need at least one or two more rewrites probably.
And the thing is, I think the fascinating, like the key thing about this episode is that it is an episode that you're watching it, right? You're watching it, moment to moment, it's a compelling hour of television. But if you take one step back and actually try to follow the logic of the episode.
Try and figure it out.
and try and figure out what was happening here?
Yeah.
None of it makes sense.
No, like, the beginning, the very first thing that doesn't make sense is why he took these particular guys and why he even thinks. It's just the opposite. The father is fulfilling his obligation.
Yes. Yeah, he's being the opposite of this guy's own dad.
And why would they tell him this anyway?
Yeah.
You know, even if he was on a charter boat, you know?
No, yeah, but it's like, why would they talk about why? Because you have to imagine, so they're on a, they're all on a train together, I guess. Right? So they're all on a train together. And they're like, okay, well, let's talk to you about, and it's like, how is it gonna come up just on a train that you're fleeing from the abusive mother? And why would he, and like you said, why would hearing that make this guy think, oh, well, this is a guy, a family I should murder?
Yeah. Like I just, that was because that part of it didn't make sense, never made sense. I think even the first time I watched it, I found it really hard. Like I'm a lot easier. Usually I'm getting less. I'm getting less easy since I saw The Inside, but I'm a lot easier on it. But this one, I just went,
it doesn't make sense.
I just don't buy it. I don't buy any of it.
No,
you know,
no, this episode just doesn't track at all.
The other people. Yes.
Yeah. Cause they follow a clear. Yeah. But it's like,
they're running away from their lives.
Although it would be hilarious if, he never actually, like, that was just an incredibly bad guess from them. And well, he never really had any particular motive, like, for targeting people. And it just so happens, in a complete coincidence, the kind of people who are running away from their lives are the kind of people who will get on a creepy charter boat alone.
Yeah.
And it was just a really bad guesstimation on their part. I know that's not what the show is saying, but it would be funny if that's what the show is saying. Oh, God. Yeah, it's frustrating. It's a frustrating episode. Like, it really is. There's no way to, like, explain away this episode's problems. I wish there was. There's just not. All right, so let's... God, I can't believe how hard we've been on these two episodes. And then immediately next, what we're going to, what I call the worst episode of Criminal Minds. Let's do it.
Supply and demand.
Okay.
When two missing persons are found dead in the trunk of a dead man's car, the BAU works with SSA and SWAN. And the FBI's domestic, SSA Andy Swan.
Yeah.
And the FBI's domestic trafficking task force to take down a human trafficking organization. Meanwhile, Hotch warns the team of possible restructuring and a familiar face makes an unexpected decision.
Okay. So we're going to talk about the cast shuffles. Which turned out not to be much, but the cast shuffles at the end of the episode. For now, can we just focus on one of the dumbest episodes of Criminal Minds that they've ever done? Like, every part of this, it's like one of those weird things where it's like, wow, every part of this episode is the dumbest episode I've ever seen.
It's beyond belief.
How bad this episode is. Yeah, no, it is. I think that's fair to say.
Who believes this from?
From moment one.
From moment one.
From, like, the first moment of this episode. So the guy,
The guy's got two dead bodies in his car, mm-hmm. and he's driving like a maniac, bringing attention to himself. Are you out of your mind?
Like, what if there had been a cop behind you?
Yeah.
You're not operating on a timeline.
What do you care?
You got nowhere to be. Your job today is to, like, your whole job for the whole day
is to get
is to cut up two bodies with a chainsaw and bury them in a shallow grave somewhere out in the woods of Virginia. Okay. That's your whole job for today. Why are you in such a rush?
Yeah. It's not like they haven't done it before.
They've apparently been doing this dozens of times. But you're right. Like, literally the first moment of this episode is dumb.
It's dumb.
And it only gets worse.
Yeah.
Like, it starts terrible and it gets worse. Because, and this is where we have to, like, okay, so they get a contact from this woman who runs the trafficking group. The trafficking special task force. And she's like, here's the thing. I've been tracing a group of human traffickers who kidnap college students, murder them, kidnap college students for a sex slavery ring, and they've recently upgraded to murdering people. Right? Okay. That's fine. And you're like, and her theory is these men and women are being kidnapped from all across the country. We have found no connection between them, right? We have no idea how to trace them. So my plan was, in 10 colleges across the country, just have FBI agents hang out and hope somebody kidnaps them. That was her plan. Just hang out, hope somebody kidnaps you. And the crazy part is, her plan works.
Because she's shocked and stunned.
Wait, my plan actually worked? Oh, one of my people got kidnapped? And it's like, she missed her check-in. Why does she have a check-in? The plan was her to be kidnapping bait. So your plan was to find out that at some point in the past 12 hours a woman has been kidnapped and have no other leads? How is this your plan? But the plan works, and we immediately find out, oh, the plan worked? It was the worst plan ever, because now she's been kidnapped and we have no idea where she is.
Oh, she must have been following her own lead and didn't tell us anything. Are you friggin' out of your mind?
Why would she follow her own leads and not tell you? Like, why would she not constantly be updating you on what she's doing? There's no reason not to. She's got no backup. Like, and again,
she's got a handler.
Yeah, she's got a handler she can be calling whenever she wants. She's not really a college student, you know? Like, there's no reason she can't keep you apprised of every moment of her life and her movements. In fact, it is ridiculous to imagine that she wouldn't do that.
That they wouldn't keep tabs on her closely.
Well, how could they not keep tabs on her?
This is ridiculous. Well, I guess because she's been doing this. That, I mean, maybe Agent Andy Swan, SSA Andy Swan.
Yep.
Doesn't really believe that this is going to come to anything, and so she doesn't really bother.
Yes.
How's that?
Maybe.
No, but it's so stupid. Is this how the FBI does undercover operations?
Of course not. The point is, it's not this is the crazy part. The FBI, when you're doing an undercover operation, right, you actually have to be prepared to be missing to be incommunicado for weeks or even months at a time if you're doing an undercover operation. Yeah. But then if something goes down, like, let's say, for example, I'm going to use an example from an actual episode of Criminal Minds that we're going to be talking about in a few months. So let's say something was going to go down. Like, for example, you're undercover. We know you've got to keep quiet because you're undercover, right? You can't have people following you, but you can't meet publicly with your handler. We've all seen Wise Guy. But let's say, for example, if you haven't seen Wise Guy, you have to. It's on Prime. Let's say, for example, you get a call saying a higher up in the drug organization wants to meet you. Get on this bus and take the bus out into the middle of nowhere. Right? At that point, even if you're undercover, you would call up your handler and you'd say, hey, I might have a lead on the head of this drug cartel. But also somebody might be setting me up to be murdered. I've been asked to take a bus out into the middle of nowhere. Here's when I'm going to be doing that. Here's where I've been told to get off the bus. Arrange some frigging surveillance.
Yeah.
Because that's how the FBI operates. But that's the thing. That's if you're undercover. These people aren't undercover. They're bait.
Yeah. And that's...
That's completely different than being undercover.
And how... Well, how would you allow this anyway?
How does this woman fish? Does she just throw a worm into the water and then come back 12 hours later?
And go... Oh, didn't catch anything today.
No, didn't catch anything. Oh, the worm's gone and the fish isn't still here. Guess I'll throw another worm in there. Come back in another 12 hours.
Or, you know, because this girl seems to have been on her own for months.
I know. But again, the idea was we don't know how they're selecting victims. We don't know where they're selecting victims. Just hang out at university. See if somebody kidnaps you.
Yeah. And how is this supposed to work?
How could this possibly, like, how could any part of this have worked?
I don't
know.
It's
so frustrating. Oh, this episode is so frustrating.
But it's just funny.
It is.
It's so stupid.
But anyway, she does get kidnapped. And it turns out somehow a 25-year-old woman is the head of a snuff ring?
Yes.
What? How did that happen? How did she get 8 mercenaries to work for her? Where did she come from that she's the one in charge of this organization?
Oh, well.
I want her show.
I guess Erica Messer wants you to understand that women can be just as evil as men.
Of course they can. I'm just saying that in how has she put together this organization? You need so much work to put an organization like this. You need a lot of people to trust you. You need a lot of people being willing to give you a lot of money. How is this 25-year-old woman
pulling that off?
No.
She's involved with the guy who owned all of those hotels that went bankrupt. And this is his side business.
Maybe, but...
That's the way I answered that question.
Except within the episode, we're led to believe that he's just, you know, one of the customers who, you know, provides the locations for the thing in exchange for some of the money. Like, we are not led to believe that she is the front man for the organization. We are led to believe that she is the head of the organization. Yeah. Everyone calls her boss.
Yep. That doesn't mean she doesn't have a silent partner.
Okay. It's like, how did this organization get set up? Oh God, and my favorite just complete nonsense line for how they find the location is, wait a minute, sorry, I'm already laughing. In order to be the kind of person who could go to a club where people are raped and murdered, they would have to know they had some, you would have to like prove that you were already a criminal, a white collar criminal. Let's look for a list of white collar criminals in this area here right now. Oh, one of the, you know, a guy who committed tax fraud also owns one of the clubs a person was kidnapped from. He must be involved. Let's check his other property. He owns an abandoned mule tannery. That must be where the murders are happening. Like, the series of leaps of logic it takes to get there is so absurd. It's like, dude, because under your fixing of the episode, he's one of the guys running the organization.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah, that would be my fix.
No, and that is a good fix. But the problem is, if he's running, one of the guys running the organization, you're gonna let people abduct victims from your own club, thereby attracting police attention to you? When you know that it's in your warehouse that the murders are being committed? Like, even in your fix, It makes zero sense, especially because it's not like they're just grabbing these people from a club. They're going out of their, like, they go out of their way to tell us that these people are being profiled. So they're only kidnapping people who looked like they were about to drop out of school anyway. So when they dropped off the grid, no one would be looking for them, and they would expect they just ran off somewhere and maybe killed themselves.
Yeah.
So if you're profiling that deeply, why are you just grabbing people from your club as well?
I know. I didn't say my fix was a good one.
Okay. You're right.
You didn't Clearly.
You completely repaired the episode. Oh, it's just, this episode makes me so mad.
But it's where you could start.
No, you're right. It is where you would, like, if I was trying to fix this episode, you have found the perfect starting point.
That would be the start. And episode. Then you'd have to fix other things in the episode, right?
Oh, a ton of things.
Yes. I'm not denying that, but.
Yeah. It's so but crazy, least, right?
Yeah, I mean.
You see why I refer to this as the worst episode of Criminal Minds.
Yeah, actually, I do.
Okay, so we can agree that it is basically the worst. I know that I like a happy ending as much as the next guy. Mm-hmm. I have no idea how and as someone who loves happy endings, who just, you know, last episode, we just said, why couldn't there have been a happy ending? Why couldn't that dad have been alive and in a coma? You know?
Yeah.
That would have been
something like that.
Something, you know? But anyway, and so they don't know who it is, but they figure it's the same guy because he's got a bunch of stab wounds on him and he was in the water. There you go. Fine. But anyway, my point is, I like a happy ending as much as the next guy. I have no idea how the undercover, like, bait woman survives this episode.
She was supposed to have been killed.
She isn't, though.
I know she isn't. Like, I was going, okay. And then it turns out she's not dead? What do you mean?
What do you mean she's not dead? A woman was standing there with a gun next to her head. And then we're told, and then as she's standing there with a gun next to this woman's head, she finds out that the FBI is rolling up.
Yeah.
And we don't see what happens. We see her lying there in a chair with blood on her head, and then we're told she's fine. I'm like, so did she try to shoot her in the head and miss?
Miss? No, she killed her.
Yes, obviously she killed her.
She made big, big money. I mean, remember, the bidding started at double.
But yeah, exactly. But but the thing is, even if you assume all of the bidding went out the window when they found out the FBI was outside, there's no way she doesn't immediately shoot her in the head the minute she finds out the FBI is outside. And it's like, the episode wanted to have the team rescue her, but they couldn't figure out a way to logically make that happen and still do the scene where the boss almost escapes. And then they realize at the last minute she's one of the people instead and shoot her.
Yeah.
So you've got this problem where it just doesn't, like, they can't come up with a way, so they, at the last minute, say, oh no, she's fine, and just expect us to accept that. That the woman shot her in the head and missed.
No, there's no way. I would have preferred
they had rescued her.
Pardon?
Yeah.
Yes, no, it's nice that they rescued her, but as far as I was concerned, no, this is the one where, no, she's dead, and we all cry, and we go to a funeral.
Yeah, and we go to a funeral, and by the way, it's that FBI agent's friggin' fault.
For setting her up this-
For having the worst plan in the history of police investigations.
Human trafficking. How in God's name would you set somebody up
to be
as
bait
anyway?
I mean, and the thing is, I understand bait people, right? But if you're using someone as bait, you have to have two guys watching them at all
times. The time.
At all times. Cause that's how bait works.
Yeah.
Again, the show acts like she's undercover, but she's not undercover. She's bait.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is, Erica Messer's a terrible writer.
No.
I don't want to be too controversial here, okay? I don't want to, like, start anything. I think Erica Messer might be bad at her job.
You're going to get an argument from me? I don't think so.
Because she's the sole credit on this one, right?
Yep. Like it's all sole her, credit. Like... Sole credit and some. Right, oh, so and
now
Charles.
Can we get Keppel. It now? I think we should get into the behind the scenes stuff. And I'm gonna throw out a theory about that sole credit. Is this gonna sound crazy?
Okay, go ahead.
We're going to talk about the end of the season and how screwed over Rachel Nichols was by this season of television.
Okay, well, first of all, we have to remind everybody that at the very end of the episode...
Well, that's what I was about to get to. Because
JJ shows up.
Rachel Nichols. There. So I'll just introduce this and then we'll talk about that. So Rachel Nichols was brought in to replace JJ and, to a certain extent, Padgett Brewster, who was being fired, right? And so they killed up and then they devoted this and they never gave Rachel Nichols, like some people behind the scenes were sabotaging the plan to segue over to Rachel Nichols by never giving her episodes, never giving her scenes, doing three episodes about Emily's departure, none of which Rachel Nichols has a line in. And then after Emily's gone, Rachel Nichols, Ashley, has basically nothing to do for the rest of the season as well. Right? It's unbelievably frustrating watching this actress be completely sidelined in what's specifically her own show. Because, as we see, three episodes before the ending, they set up a plot, Aaron's getting fired, Hotch, is gonna become the boss, he's gonna be in one of every three episodes, but he'll still be kind of on the show. That is what they are setting up four episodes from the end. That is explicitly what is
happening. That really is what it looks like they're setting up for sure.
And then in this episode, they're like, don't expect, the end of the episode is, don't expect anyone to be back next year. Right? Except for JJ. Literally the only character who is guaranteed to be back next season is JJ. Which is crazy because they fired her at the start of the season. But it's so at some point, right around the time they were firing Emily, they're like, the fans are too pissed off. We need JJ back. And so they just don't put Rachel Nichols in the last six episodes of the season. She's barely in them because they know they're bringing JJ back. I feel like the uproar, again, I don't know what the fan reaction was like, but I feel like the uproar over losing Prentice and JJ in the same season, they were so worried about the fans that the minute they saw the fan reaction to killing off Emily, they phoned up AJ Cook and said, please come back. And at that moment they phoned her up and said, please come back, they then said, oh, well, obviously, we're just gonna cut Rachel Nichols loose. Because you can't have two blonde ladies on the show. Right? And that's why the end of this episode is so weird, because they're like, Xander quite reasonably says, maybe you should quit. This job isn't good for you.
Mm-hmm.
Which it's not. She's never had a healthy relationship in her life. She ruins her relationship with Xander over the job. You know, she already did, but it's just that bullet hasn't hit yet.
No.
Right? As we talked about. Derek could go to New York. Right?
Yeah.
Derek could go to New York. Joe is obviously, worried about this whole world and is considering retiring again.
Again. Yeah.
They have just established that Reed is starting to get, psychosomatic headaches that at the beginning of next season, they could say he's had to retire because he's worried about schizophrenia. Every single character, and of course, they've already set up Aaron is going to go take Aaron's job and become their new boss. And what interests me, right, is here's my conspiracy theory. You can tell me I'm wrong. Feel free to do so, okay?
Mm-hmm.
There's something I noticed about the character, right, here. The character, the head of trafficking in this episode. She gets a very dramatic introduction, and she gets a lot of screen time.
I thought she was going to be in next season.
That is my conspiracy theory.
Mm-hmm.
My conspiracy theory is They're firing, essentially, Thomas Gibson, moving him upstairs, mm-hmm. and she's going to be taken over for him next year.
Oh, well, that's even, yeah, because I saw her as
replacing Emily.
Emily, because she's and got the I dark hair. That, she's replacing.
But she's all, yeah. But I don't think she can logically replace Emily if Aaron's on the team, because she's already the head of a group in the FBI.
Yeah.
That's as important as Aaron's group.
Yeah. That's true.
I think their plan was, you kick Aaron upstairs. He's only in every third or fifth episode, right? And then she's the new lead lady on the team. I think that was the plan. And the reason I think that is I think they also tried to do that, back in season two, because they, back in season two, have a character who's essentially the exact same character. And, she's the head of the child, trafficking.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
No, the porn thing. She's basically not trafficking, the child porn thing. She's basically the same character. She gets the same kind of weirdly layered introduction of everyone telling us how good she is at her job. Right. And
could have fooled me.
They're terrible in both cases, but that's the writers. But everybody talks how great they are at their job. And then they get weirdly large amount of the episode. And it's like, I suspect that they were considering maybe bring this, cause, bringing her in to replace Lola Glaudini, cause they knew that was ending. They knew Lola Glaudini was on the way out for whatever. And I think that's why that character was showed up in an episode at the start of season two, right? And when you see them bringing in a character like that in the same way, set up to take over, and they're clearly segueing out Thomas Gibson, I feel like that was a plan. You could be right that she's just replacing Emily, but the fact that she's so high up in the FBI makes me think the intent was we just don't have as big a cast next year. Like, nobody replaces Emily. There's just a new woman who replaces Aaron. That is what I think they were going for, and they were going to have one fewer cast members the next season, is what I think the plan was. And then, obviously, some kind of crazy fan backlash happened over the summer. And as we learned from that interview, they just said, well, the fact that frigging Padgett Brewster's contract said she owed them 17 more episodes if they wanted her to there, and she had to go back.
I know, that was the stunner. She didn't want to go back.
She didn't want to go back.
She didn't want to go back. She didn't want to do this show again.
That's crazy. I was blown away when that showed up in the interview.
And then, of course, they threatened to blacklist her if she didn't do the 17 episodes that she owed them.
Yeah. Wow.
Oh, yeah.
That's crazy, right?
You were scared. Come.
Oh my God, CBS. Like, you fired her from obviously rough stuff was going on behind the scenes. She wasn't happy about, you know, her and JJ being fired to be replaced, the two of them, by Rachel Nichols. She wasn't happy about that, obviously. Then she gets fired. And then the backlash is so big and the show is such a mess that between the seasons, they're like, we need her back. And they force her back.
And then she quit after season seven, because, as she said, my heart wasn't in it.
Well, of course not. No.
Of course not. She didn't want to be there in the first place.
Yeah. But they don't kill her off. So that was nice.
Yeah.
Because they know they've always got her in their back pocket if they need her again. If they can convince her to come back, which, spoiler alert, I got to the end of season 11, my reviews, they did need her back. I know the big stuff doesn't happen until season 12, but, yeah, she's back at the end of season 11 after Derek leaves, which, wow, that was a surprise. I assumed Derek would leave at the end of a season, but no, it's like, just like Emily, there's a bunch of episodes left in the season when he checks out.
Well, and he had work to do.
Oh no, I get it. I'm not saying that he was fired from the show. He moved on to, he's not the third.
He wanted out.
Yeah, he's not the third or second build anymore. He headlines his own show.
Yeah.
More power to him. You deserve it, Shamar Moore. You're great. Nobody's complaining. Like, the only person I see being Criminal Minds ride or die for life is Matt Kubler. And to a lesser extent, Christian Bangsness. Like, those two, I mean, like, they'll be there as long as there's a show. And, like, I had never thought that either of them would ever leave the show. Everyone else I could see, like, even though it would obviously hurt the show, which I'm going to find out in a couple of days as I get into season 12, even though it would hurt the show.
Oh, you think the show is bad now.
Thomas Gibson leaving, right? But it's like, I don't see how there's a show without Reed and Penelope. Yeah. Like, I just don't think there is a Criminal Minds. I would say there's also a Criminal Minds. There's also no Criminal Minds without Aaron. And I suspect I'm going to be proven right.
As you said, there's a whole.
You lean too far away from the mic there. I did not hear that.
Okay. I said there's a whole blog that just shut down when Aaron went. So
there's a whole blog. It was just like, we're the Criminal Minds fan blog. We love the show. We did the show. And then Aaron left and they're like, well, we're not doing this anymore.
Nope. No, that was it.
No, I mean, the thing is, I've talked a lot about how, like, Thomas Gibson should be, even though, like, he doesn't make these lists, he should be on a list of best TV dads.
Yeah.
Because we never, and he never makes those lists because you never see him with Jack on the show. But just the way the man handles his team, you know?
Oh, well, no, we saw him with Jack playing soccer and David Rossi.
And the thing is, that's a nice scene to do, but it's like, you cannot make Aaron Hotchner the coach of a soccer team. He does not have the time to be the host of the coach of a soccer team. Full stop, he did it. He doesn't. It's a cute scene, but no.
I know, but we'll let him have it.
It's a cute scene. He and Joe helping out. And it's like, if they needed the two of them to cover for 2 weeks, that's fine. But he cannot commit to that. The man is at work till 11 every day.
Yeah. Doing everybody else's paperwork.
He's doing other people's paperwork. Everybody else, he gets there at 8:30. He's there to 11. No, he cannot, you know. And that's the thing. He might not be a great father to Jack, but just the paternal energy he has with his team.
Yes.
Is so key to the relationships on that show. And that's why I am dreading and cannot, and on one level dreading and on another level can't wait to get to season 12.
Oh yeah. Well, if you thought it,
this is going to be fascinating.
After season 6, just wait.
Yeah. Like, cause you watch in season 6, the threatened loss of him and you think of how it would have crippled the show. Yeah. And now I'm actually going to find out.
Yeah.
So yeah, season 6, it ended in one hell of a mess. Like, I cannot imagine, like, watching this show live, and it's like, and the cliffhanger is not, there's still a murderer out there the way it traditionally is at the end of seasons. The cliffhanger is, who's going to be in the cast next year?
Yeah.
That's weird. You just don't see that kind of thing, right? And the fact that nobody is in the cast next year. Nobody has changed in the cast next year. It's like such an anticlimax after this ending.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a fascinating end to the season. And season 6 of Criminal Minds. I was going to say, is it hard to figure out what the worst episode is? No, of course not. It's this episode. It's episode 22. It's the worst episode. One of the dumbest episodes they've ever done. Just a trash fire in every respect.
Yeah.
What's the best episode?
Okay. Well, as we were talking, probably the Valhalla.
Well, if you count Valhalla and Lauren as one episode.
Yeah. Yeah. Valhalla and Lauren, basically the Emily leaving scene episode. If you had that as a single episode. Story. But none of them can be best episodes because they had other things going on while those were happening, right?
Yeah. Cause you're right. The Emily scenes.
Maybe Lauren
was always the best. I'd say, okay, Lauren. I don't agree with you on that one.
Yeah.
I really liked Valhalla too, but I think you're right in saying that it's Lauren's the best episode.
I think it's the best episode of the year without a doubt. I mean, things like Corazon. you know, go
it's
down.
Coruscant's an interesting episode because it opens a door for Reed. Like,
yeah,
just the fact that this man, the episode after Lauren, right, in this one season, and it's like, we build up this meta Reed, and you're like, how do they not see it? This episode opens, like, Coruscant opens with him finding out that, like, he's getting treatment for his headaches, right?
Yeah.
And it's like, and there's no medical reason for his headaches, and he's freaked out that he's got schizophrenia, that it's a late onset schizophrenia, and it's happening, right? And he's freaked out, and all of this, and then he gets confronted by the witch doctor, who's like, you know, there is a shadow around you, or however he puts it, right? And it's like, so all of this thing, and like, he is being torn apart by all of this stuff, and he finds out that it's all inside his head.
Yeah.
And we come back 10 episodes later, and he's like, I've never been to a therapist.
Proudly.
Proudly, I've never been to a therapist. You should go. And the thing is, it's like, you want to feel like they have to know what they're doing with Reed, but I don't think they do.
Well, of course not. You know, what I would say, the other thing we could give is the most interesting premise that I think is to be explored and yet fails drastically is remembrance of things past.
God,
the idea of what would happen to a serial killer who had Alzheimer's.
Yep.
And
it's not a great episode, but it's their best premise of the year. You're right.
I think it's the best premise. Like, it's different. It is actually a different idea. Something, I mean, they don't focus necessarily really on the Alzheimer's. You only get, but they do the one little scene where you get it. Is quite good. The episode could have been done better, but it's not the worst episode by any stretch, but it could have been better, and I would have liked to have seen it better.
Yeah.
Because because it's an interesting idea. I mean, you don't think about those things, but obviously somebody did. Janine Sherman Barua wrote it, but who knows whose idea it was. If it was hers, kudos. But yeah, it's an interesting idea.
Yeah.
So.
And we said we were going to call out and keep a list of when episodes were based on TV and movies from now on.
Okay.
So the season ender was inspired by recent Eli Roth film Hostel. Recent when this episode happened, not, you know, recent. Just, you know, clearly using some of the imagery there and definitely inspired by that. That was their jumping off point for that one. So that's something to add to our list.
This would be 6/23. 24.
I think 24, isn't it?
Yeah, 24.
Supply and demand? Yeah. Just make a note of that and then we'll keep going.
I have a pad beside my,
thing. Yeah, where you take the notes while we're working so we don't have to hear you clicking the keyboard, which is smart.
Yeah.
So now the big question is, how are we handling suspect behavior? We talked about it last week, but obviously I will just reiterate here. Next week, the regular Thursday episode, the numbered Thursday episode is going to go up. That is going to be the first two episodes of Criminal Minds Suspect Behavior.
We're going to do
two. Right? It's just going to be two. We're doing two a week. But the next, so in 2 weeks, that Thursday show, that's going to be Criminal Minds 701 to 703. Right?
Yeah.
So the Thursday show will go back after 1 week of Suspect Behavior. The Thursday show, the numbered episodes, will go back to being just Criminal Minds as usual. We're going to do an extra Monday show every week for 7 weeks. Is it seven? Yeah, no, because there's 13 episodes. So for 7 weeks, we will be doing, I guess, on top. My math is terrible.
Look, we're going to do
six episodes. Monday episodes is what I'm trying to say. There's going to be overall 7 episodes of Criminal Minds Suspect Behavior. The first one will be a regular numbered Thursday episode. After that, the next 6 episodes will be Monday episodes, right? So if you want to listen to Criminal Minds Suspect Behavior, watch it with us. That's fine. But if you're just here for Criminal Minds, we completely understand. We'll be back in 2 weeks with episode 701.
That's it.
I really do encourage you to track down and check out Suspect Behavior because it is a fascinating show.
Yeah, it is.
And there is a ton to talk about on it.
I will tell you that suspect behavior has stuck in my mind more than Criminal Minds. Yeah. And probably because Criminal Minds is starting to go haywire and suspect behavior comes on and then they cancel it after 13 episodes and the screaming in our house was.
I know.
And they ended on a friggin' cliffhanger. So.
Oh God, I know. And then anyway, the disrespect they show to Brunero to never resolve that cliffhanger. It just makes me have that much more contempt for them. But anyway.
CBS, you're horrible.
Yeah. And CBS is horrible and the people taking over Criminal Minds are horrible.
Yes.
Because it's not like, you know, the other people who took over Criminal Minds when Ed Brunero was segueing his way out, they could have wrapped up suspect behavior. They chose not to. You know what Chris Carter did when Millennium was canceled?
Yeah.
He did a god-awful episode of The X-Files to wrap up Millennium. Mm-hmm. It was a betrayal of everything that Millennium was, and it was the worst wrap-up possible for the show.
But
he did it.
But he did it. And there is no reason that they couldn't have done it except, which always goes to my point that, you know, they all sit around and talk about that, you know, the Criminal Minds family and how blah, 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 blah. Like even Padgett Brewster sort of does it when she goes back later on, right?
Yeah.
And even in that interview that we were talking about, you know, she talks about loving
the people who work there, but not liking the network. I get it.
Yeah. You know, but I'm telling you, there had to be knives out.
Of course.
All the time among that. Like Ed Brunero had to be fighting anyway.
Constantly.
Anybody who's made it to this episode of Criminal Minds knows who I think is leading the charge. So okay. I'm not even going to say it.
We don't have to say anymore.
To get rid
Let's just say that it's a person whose work we don't respect.
No.
And that'll be that.
Brunero. trying to get rid of Gibson.
Yeah.
You know, and I think probably the network is what kept Gibson on the show because they didn't want to go through the fan mess of getting rid of him.
Well, yeah, because the fans friggin' love Thomas Gibson.
Yeah.
And they should. He's amazing. All right. So, let's wrap this up here. Thank you so much for letting us go on this tangent about internal politics, CBS, and, you know, the behind-the-scenes stuff of the show, which is based entirely on extrapolation and a few interviews we've read.
And our understanding of character.
Oh, no, of course. our basic understanding of human nature that the Criminal Minds team screws up so frequently. That was a drive-by. But anyway, the point is, it was an uneven season, and I'm very interested to get started on season 7, which I suspect will be a transition into just full on awfulness.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like that's definitely, I think, where we're going next. So let's, just invite you to check us back here next week for Suspect Behavior, then 2 weeks for 701. If you want to reach out to us, if you have any comments, if you have any questions, if you have any profiling related fiction you think we should check out, drop us a line profilingcriminalminds@gmail.com. We will see you back here next week. But until then, thanks for listening and au revoir.
And good night.
Profiling Criminal Minds is a member of the Kinks Podcasting Network.